Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's up, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs and leaders looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. In today's interview episode of Getting Work to Work, I talk with Tina Esmaker, a coach, writer, and speaker, about reinvention, resilience, and rediscovering identity and values on the other side of life-changing circumstances. We touch on the importance of starting, not waiting for permission, and why you should constantly be investing in yourself and the things that are important to you. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/245. Tina, welcome to Getting Work to Work. We've already been going and having a great conversation, but why don't you share a little bit about who you are and the work that you do?
Yeah, so I'm a life and career coach for creators. Mm-hmm. I work with individuals and teams across the creative industry. I also do speaking and writing. And, you know, my work is really about the themes that we wrestle with as creatives. Mm-hmm. It's about the themes that dot the creative landscape. So I give people the tools and the frameworks to take action and move forward, but I also help them address things like, you know, self-doubt and imposter syndrome and all the ups and downs, right? All the emotions that go along with being someone who takes a non-traditional path. There are no guarantees. There's a lot of ambiguity. We struggle with that. We want security, but we want freedom, right? We want it all. And so I help people navigate, you know, like the practical day-to-day, how can they take action toward their goals? And I help people navigate that emotional aspect of it and all of the ambiguity and uncertainty that comes along with choosing a non-traditional path.
Yeah. Wow. There's so many ways to think about what you just described. But one of the areas that was interesting to me when I was reading your bio was that you actually have a background in social work. Mm-hmm. And how has that actually prepared you for working in the creative community? Because I imagine sometimes creatives can almost seem like they need a social worker to help them out.
Yes. So when I was 18, I was living in Michigan. I had graduated high school and I went to community college because I didn't want to go into debt. There was no college fund. It was you're paying your own way, getting a grant, getting a scholarship. And so I went to community college. I saw a job posting on the job board in the student center, right? And it was youth care worker. And I thought, I can work with young people. I'm a young person. What I didn't know was that it was for a direct care staff position at the runaway and homeless youth shelter in my hometown. And so I did the interview. I mean, I was clueless. Somehow I got the job. And I began working there at age 18, and it just threw me into this world. You know, I was learning on the job. I mean, growing up, I had always been really in tune with people and their emotions. I always wanted to help people. I loved the underdog. If someone was picking on someone on the playground, I wanted to step in and say, hey, hey, hey. But I got an education there working at the shelter, and I saw the counselors who many had social work degrees, some had counseling degrees. And I saw them helping people in our community and having a direct impact. And even though at that point in time, I was taking a lot of fine art classes at community college, I was interested in writing, but I didn't see a clear path into that, right? I didn't, you know, it was very blue collar. I'm from the Midwest and I didn't know anyone who worked as an artist or a writer and got paid. To me, growing up, it was always considered that's a hobby. What are you going to do for your job? And so I thought, well, you know, these counselors are helping people. They're getting paid, I think. No one told me you don't make much money in social work. But of course, that's not why I did it anyway. And so I switched my major to social work. I went to Wayne State in Detroit and had a wonderful education from some amazing practitioners. Graduated, continued working at the same nonprofit, but in a different role because I have my degree now. So I got a title upgrade and a pay raise and continued working there for another 6 years. So I was at the nonprofit for, I think it was about 12 years. And what's funny is that I thought that work was not creative at all, but actually it was. And it has given me the foundation for everything I've done since.
Wow. In what ways did it allow you the, I guess, the freedom to transition from work that you didn't think was creative to work that was creative?
Well, I mean, there's a whole story to that. But I, looking back now, you know, social work was, it was all about people, and empathy was the foundation of everything that I did, every interaction. And on top of that, it's so much about problem solving. I mean, there's no template. When you're working with people, everyone's different. The dynamic will be different with every single individual you encounter. And so you are constantly problem solving, and you're thinking, okay, how can I frame this? What language is best to use? How can I build rapport? How can I earn trust? Because the population I was working with were people, young people and their families, and most often they were in crisis, and sometimes visibly in crisis, you know, upset and a lot of emotion. And you have to use your skills to be very incisive and get to the heart of, this is what I'm hearing. This is what's going on. Let's start from here. And how can we all partner and work together to, you know, so there's a win-win-win, so that everyone can move forward together. And it was really, really hard work. And so I think that it taught me to, you know, to me, there was no template for interacting with people. It was everyone's an individual, meet them where they're at. And it allowed me to just get curious and ask questions about everything, because it was such an education for me, seeing so many people's experiences, hearing so many stories of how people grew up and the encounters they had. And it just opened my eyes to the many, many ways that we live and move through the world, and that our experiences are our experiences. And we think, you know, we think our experience is normal. Like, no one's experience is normal, because it just feels normal to you because it was yours, but we all have that. And it was, yeah, it was a really profound time in my life. But then, you know, I wanted to do something more outwardly creative. And so at the time, my former husband and turned out to be business partners as well, we were talking about working on a creative project together. And we had talked about it and talked about it and talked about it for years. And we always came back to this idea of a magazine. And he was doing design and had his own studio working for clients. And, you know, we finally said, we have to stop talking about it and do something about it. And so we started a magazine called The Great Discontent, which was really an expression of where we were at the time. We wanted to talk to other creative people, and not just people who were creators, but people who were doing it for a living and making money, because that's where I was. I was a social worker, but there was a creative part of me that I wanted to be even more in tune with. And, you know, there was only so much I could bring that into my work in a really visceral way. And so The Great Discontent was an opportunity to explore, like, how do people follow these non-traditional paths and make a go of it?
Yeah. And that's actually where I first learned about the work you were doing. I think it was the digital version, where you're posting just amazing photos, in-depth interviews. And then I bought one of the magazines, and I'm just like, this is legit.
Yeah.
And of all of them, though, what really stood out was when you would just kind of share the behind the scenes stories of how you were going through the process and how you were learning. I think that was something that really stood out to me as kind of the, almost the meta story. So you have the creators over here, but you have your own story of how you're interacting and building something as well. And I found that highly fascinating.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because it was a side project, and I don't know, I think we had hoped it would become something more, but we didn't anticipate the community that would grow around it, you know, very organically, just launching the magazine online and then successfully running a Kickstarter to make the first print issue, launching an online shop, making more print issues. Then, you know, in the meantime, we had moved from Michigan to New York and started a live event series and recorded that and published that to our podcast in iTunes. So, you know, it really grew into this multimedia publication and this community of people saying, oh, what you're doing resonates with me. I've been asking similar questions. And, you know, the dynamic for me with the subjects we interviewed was, we're all just people. And I really wanted to talk to people who had a platform and some level of success and just take that all away and say, you're just a person. Like, you've achieved a lot. I respect you and your work, but really, what is it like?
Yeah.
And tell me all the things. Tell me the hard parts. Tell me about the, you know, the successes, the wins, the risks you've taken, what you've learned. And I think it was really like pulling back the curtain on some of my favorite creators to say, let me in and tell me the truth. And
what a great platform for empathy though, to really shine, because I imagine the more you were able to connect on that human level, the more they opened up.
You know, I think people can feel the energy and intention you have around a request. And so, you know, TGD was always, it was never about, it was always about giving back to the creative community. And it came out of our own curiosity first, but it was like, okay, if this resonates with us, other people are going to be curious about this stuff too. And we actually did, this is not a best practice in the industry, but we would let people read their interviews before they were published. Because we wanted people to know that, hey, we are here to, like, we really want to represent you and your story, and we want the voice to be yours. It's not about us. It's not about trying to uncover something scandalous, right?
Yeah.
And so we want to represent you in the best possible way. And so people would read through, and sometimes they'd want to make changes, but most of the time, you know, they'd if there were factual errors, right, or things lost in translation, they would correct or clarify. But most of the time people would say, wow, this is me. Thank you. Go for it.
Wow. I mean, the level of trust, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Wow. So when you look back at that time, are there any standout moments that amaze you and how much you learned and grew as a person?
Yeah, there are a few. I mean, the first is just starting, because I had wanted to do creative work. I'd wanted to write. I always loved words and language. I mean, English was my favorite class growing up, and all the exercises around grammar and punctuation, I was delighted. it's so nerdy. But no one gave me permission. No one said, here, start this project and a community will grow around it. It was realizing you just have to start where you are, and you can start any day. You don't have to wait to move. You don't have to wait for someone to say, yeah, you're talented. You should do this. Like, you just have to start. And the more you do something, the more you practice and the more you put it out into the world, people begin to associate you with that. So, you know, no one told me I was a good interviewer, or I didn't even know if I was. I didn't know if I could. I knew I had to interview people for work all the time at social work, for my social work job. And so what I knew was that I can talk to strangers, I can ask them really personal questions, and I can do it in a way that builds trust and rapport and helps them open up. So I knew I could do that. Like, Ryan knew that he could design and art direct and really define an aesthetic of a brand. And so it was like, well, what skills do we have and what can we do from there? So, you know, number one, no one's going to give you permission. You just have to go do it if you want to. Also, no one is going to, like, you'll become known for what you do, right? So whatever you want to be known for, do more of that. If there's something you don't enjoy and you're still doing it, if you don't have to do it, quit and make space for something that you enjoy more.
Nice.
And then I think just realizing your own possibility. I always enjoyed written communication. Speech class was terrifying for me. I never ever thought I would host a podcast or a live show. I never thought I would be a guest on podcasts. I never thought I would speak, you know, to audiences, like, you know, 15 people or a couple thousand. Like, it was all so, so scary to me. And I was able to do that through TGD. It really gave me a platform to try the things I wanted to try. It gave me opportunities to push myself past what I thought I was capable of. And so, you know, passion projects that become your gig, right? You know, you can shape them in any way you want. And to me, that was really beautiful, because everything I did with TGD, you know, led into what I'm doing now. I'm still speaking and writing, and now I'm coaching also. But it was, yeah, it really was a platform that launched me into this current season. And then I met so many amazing kind, generous, talented people, and many of them I'm still in touch with. And then there's a handful who I became really close with.
Oh, cool.
And still, you know, very good friends with today. And so just the community that came out of that for me has been really like generative and encouraging.
That's awesome. That's very cool. One of the things that's interesting is that, you know, you're talking about, you know, a personal project that turned into something more. And creatives often dream about how their lives are going to change for the positive because of their passion projects. So maybe like fortune, fame, likes. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we rarely think about the negative repercussions.
Yeah.
Like how our lives will actually be impacted by the time that we spend. And so how do you view the importance of value of projects, maybe balancing those two worlds of, you know, the positive and the negative?
Yeah, gosh, we have such a fantasy in our minds, right? We romanticize it. Oh, it's going to be so great. Well, you know, there are so many things I would do differently. I mean, I'm so, so proud of the work that I put out. I'm really proud of what Ryan and I created together. Mm-hmm. But I'm not proud of how I do the work. And I talk about this a lot now when I'm speaking at conferences and events. I really, really burnt myself out. And I didn't invest in myself. I didn't invest in my marriage in the way I wish I would have. You know, in hindsight, everything's 2020. But, you know, you tell yourself things like, oh, well, I'll take a vacation when, or I'll stop working nights and weekends when, or I'll hang out with friends and go visit family when. Fill in the blank. There are an endless amount of excuses. And I think I was so fixated and focused on the business. I felt like if I stopped, I would get behind. I would lose out on opportunities, lose out on financial opportunities because there was so much pressure once we said, okay, this is, we're going to really see what we can do here. We're going to focus on this full time. It creates such an enormous pressure. So my advice now to people is that if there's a way you can use your day job to fund your dream job or your passion project, if there's a way you can, you know, save up and have runway, we didn't have that. Mm-hmm. If there's a way you can ease that financial pressure so that you can explore the project in a way that feels organic, that to me is the best route. Because as soon as anything becomes a business, it changes the way you make decisions about it. And it puts pressure on it for it. A business is a business, right? It needs to make money. Right. And it changes everything. And so you feel like, you know, you can't just punch out at the end of the day and not think about the thing. You think about it all the time and it can be all consuming, you know? So I don't know if I'm answering your question. There are a lot of lessons. You know, it's hard because there's so many gifts that came out of that project in that season. There are also so many things that I would do differently because of what I know now. But at the time, like, no one gives you a manual and says, like, here, make sure to take care of yourself and to have healthy boundaries and to not neglect your relationships. And, oh, and like also do all the things you need to do to build your business. You know, there's no manual that we're given when we decide to start a business, unfortunately.
Right. Well, it sounds like you just described the manual, though, in a lot of ways. It's like, what are we unwilling to do, I think, sometimes is the better question than what manual can I read to be successful? You know, what am I willing to say no to? I guess that comes back to the boundaries that you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, I thought about that a lot. You know, I don't know if we want to get to this part of the story yet, but at a part in the story, you know, my marriage ends pretty abruptly. And then, you know, we're not just life partners, we're business partners. And we grew this magazine together and we had this community. And I feel a responsibility, like, oh my gosh, what next? And I transitioned out of my role with the magazine and decided to reinvent myself and do my own thing. But in the process of that, you know, what happened when my marriage ended and the hustle stopped was I was like, oh, I don't know who I am outside of my work identity and outside of my marriage, right? Like those were my main identities and I just did not know. And I had to do the work of rediscovering myself and my values and what's important to me. And I absolutely knew I drew a hard line in the sand. There were a few things I knew. I knew that I just could not rejoin the hustle like I had, you know, because I had neglected. I mean, thank God my friends and family understood and they were there for me. But I just hadn't invested in those relationships in the way that I wish I would have. I was lucky because they were like, yeah, cool, I'm here for you, whatever you need. But I didn't take care of myself either, you know, like my physical health, my mental health. I was just completely out of touch with who I was as a person. And so I think for me, you know, the non-negotiables now are like, I make time each week to connect with friends. I make time to go to the gym. I make time to journal and reflect. Like if I don't do those things, it doesn't matter how good my business looks on paper, because my life needs to have a solid foundation that means doing certain things for myself.
One of the things that I value so much is that you are both an open book and just, I don't know, you just have a way with walking through where you've been. Maybe it's just your social work background. Maybe it's just the fact that you seem like a very good, nice human being. But is this ability to share and be open about, you know, the process, but also these hard life-altering decisions and reinvention, does this come naturally to you? Or is this something that you've grown into because of these experiences?
Yeah, I've definitely grown into it. I mean, I think all writers enjoy self-disclosure a little bit, and I don't know. I think that during the latter half of my marriage, you know, the relationship, you know, it was like 10 years. We worked together for 5 years. So the latter half we worked together, and the last couple of years, you know, you're feeling burnt out from trying to grow this business. It was hard, and it's hard working with a partner. And I felt really isolated, and I was actually very shut down. I wasn't telling anyone what was happening. I wasn't talking to anyone. I wasn't in therapy. I just was like, oh, I'm going to go into self-preservation mode and build a wall around myself. And so, you know, when my marriage ended and I had to transition out of the business, I just felt like my world was falling apart and I felt so out of control. And I knew, I was like, I had this very clear moment where I was like, you have two choices here, Tina. You can continue to try to do this alone and isolate yourself. Mm-hmm. That's going to go to a very dark place. Or you can reach out to people and say, I'm going through some shit. I need help. And I did the latter. And one of the first people I reached out to was Debbie Millman, who was, you know, she was an acquaintance and a colleague, but I wouldn't say we were, you know, friends by any means. Mm-hmm. But I knew she had been through a lot in life. And so I texted her and I said, I'm going through some stuff. Can we talk? And she was like, sure. How about today at 3:30? And we got on the phone and I just said, wow. I was like, I'm getting divorced and I probably am going to leave the business. And I don't even know if I can stay in New York. And she listened to me and she said, look, your life is going to be magical again because you're open to the universe. And, you know, I'm going to give you, she gave me some practical things to do. I wrote down a list and she's like, whatever you need, I'm here for you. And she's, you know, one of them, her life is so full, you know, she's traveling and speaking and, you know, doing all these things. And she always made time for me. And that was such a gift. And you know, I think about that in my own life, like no matter what we're going through or where we're at, like we can always make time. Like busy is an excuse. And so I realized that, you know, because the Great Discontent magazine had somewhat of a community and a following and a platform, I just thought, well, I'm going to have to go through this publicly at some point. So I might as well just own it, because you know what I really wanted, like during the years that it was hard, and especially the last year, it was like, all I really wanted was to just be the same person in every space I occupied, because it is really hard to pretend. And so I gave myself space to grieve and process and go to therapy and, like, you know, deal with like logistical things, emotional things. And, you know, it was like from January to, I don't know, I think it was August maybe. And I just gave myself privacy. Friends knew, family knew, social media did not know. And then I decided to share online so that people, you know, I was just like, this is the reality of what I'm going through. And I posted about it and I continue to share about what I've learned and insights I've had and people resonate with it. And I am so glad that I chose to be open about my journey and the process, because it's been healing for me. But others have also said it's been healing for them. And
yeah.
I was listening to a podcast recently and they were asking the question, what is resilience? And the person defined it, resilience is accepting reality. And I think about that a lot, because when we don't talk about the things that we're going through, we're all going through something. When we don't talk about those things, there's shame, there's stigma. You know, oftentimes there can be denial, like, oh, I'm not really going through this, or it's not my fault, right? When we accept the reality, we have to accept this is really happening. This is my life. Here's my part in it. This is the part I played. This is what I can take responsibility for. Going forward, I'm going to do things, you know, in a different manner. Mm-hmm. And we really own it and let it be part of our narrative. And I think that it is refreshing when I see other people being honest about their stories. And it's just us bearing witness to our own humanity in each other.
Wow. One of the things that I'm picking up as you're talking is the journey of permission. So starting with the permission to create, then you go through to the permission to just be yourself. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the permission to share even. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything there, but I don't know. There's something to me that sounds like that permission is not just in one area, it's in many.
Yeah. No, that's an interesting observation. It's definitely felt like that for me, you know, growing up. So, I mean, this isn't my first rodeo. my mother died unexpectedly of a heart attack when I was 10.
Oh, wow.
And I have a twin brother who's actually autistic. And so he feels a lot like my younger brother. And my dad was wonderful, but was not prepared to run a household and raise twins. And one of them having, you know, a lot of needs. And so I think that from a young age, I just kind of wanted to shrink into the background. And I didn't want to be a burden, and I didn't want to ask for help or make too much noise. And I think this idea of permission goes back to that I was just waiting for someone to say, like, it's okay. You can need these things. You can want these things. You can be loud. You can be who you are. But I think that, you know, again, it's like it's self-preservation, and it's also reading your surroundings and feeling like there's so much going on around me and there's been so much trauma that I just want to keep things easy and simple. And so in some ways I feel like for the first time in my 37 years on this planet, I have a voice. I mean, I've always had a voice, right? I've always had something to say, but mostly those thoughts have remained in my head. That's why I've been such a voracious reader and writer, because it's that, you know, everything has for the most part remained in my imagination. But this is the first time in my life where I'm saying what I think, and I'm so convicted of the work I'm here to do and the message that I want to share with people. I am so committed that it's like, I will do whatever it takes to do the work that I'm here on this earth to do. And that means I'm going to have to make some sacrifices, and I'm going to have to say no to some things and people and opportunities that look good on paper. It feels really, really good, you know, to feel like you're in the middle of your life, in that you're saying, you're like, I am in the middle of my life. I'm in the middle of it. All the things, the good, the bad, the ugly. And it feels good. But permission. I don't feel like I need anyone's permission anymore. Nice. And that feels amazing.
Yeah. Your story is really about, at least the stage that you're in, it sounds like, is really about reinvention. Mm-hmm. And as I was kind of reflecting upon this conversation, that just kept popping into my mind. And reinvention is something we all need to consider at some stage in our life and career, but often don't really go through the process, or we rely on hacks and shortcuts. So I thought I'd ask, why do you think that is at times? that we don't really dive into reinvention?
Oh, because we're also averse to change. We say we want it, but we don't. It's so instinctual. Like, we cling to what's familiar. We cling to what we know. We try to control the outcomes so that they feel safe and secure. So no, we don't like change. I mean, we accept change when we have to, right? And so that's when, like, when these moments of pause happen because life happens and we have no choice but to pause because it's a big attention grabbing event, like a divorce or a death or an illness or even moving, right? It can be really big for us. I think we white knuckle resist change all the way. Now, but I think, you know, we don't have to completely dismantle our lives to change. I think we can make small changes in our day-to-day that have huge ripple effects in our lives and our work. And that's where I start with my clients when people come in and they want to uproot everything. It's like, wait, no. Let's look at what are some opportunities that exist for you where you are? What are some small things you can change on your day-to-day basis, right? So that is a lot of what I talk about now and share, because I did go through a big life-changing event. I went through a divorce. And it was very, very hard. But I joke with friends that my life fell together. No, it's not that my life was horrible before. It's just that I was making choices before that I wouldn't make now. And I had to go through that hard thing to learn, hey, Tina, the way you did it before was not working for you. Mm-hmm. There's another way. But I don't think that we have to go through something really hard to make those changes. And that's what I advocate for. Like, I want everyone to be able to experience what's possible for themselves. I want everyone, you know, I don't think things are mutually exclusive. I think it can be and both. Mm-hmm. I think we can live meaningful lives and do meaningful work. I think that we can be ambitious and content. Like, one doesn't negate the other. And I think that we can make small changes that have a big impact.
That's awesome. That's just so awesome. What I like about that too is it takes the pressure off of those huge moments to catch us off guard and instead puts us in a frame of intentionality every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like I was living in such a reactionary way before. Mm-hmm. And just responding to things that happened, whether they were opportunities or challenges, right? And, you know, I mean, now I have still opportunities and challenges that come my way, but I'm living more intentionally. Like, I know the things that I want in my work and life, and I have ideas of the actions, right, that I do every day or every week that are going to get me closer to those things. And I'm actively thinking about it. I'm not like, oh, whatever happens, happens. Or, oh, I just can't wait for something to happen to get me out of this situation. Well, you know what? Something did happen to get me out of that situation previously, and it was a divorce. And, like, I would have chosen another way. and so I think a lot of times we can wait around, like, oh, I hope, like, maybe someone will recognize my potential and give me the opportunity I want. Or maybe someone will give me permission to be who I really am. Or maybe something will happen that, like, allows me to move to the city that I really dream of living in, or meet this person who I'd really like to be friends with and hang out with. You know, we're just waiting, and we can wait our whole entire lives.
So apart from waiting, what are some other stumbling blocks you notice people tripping over as you coach them and to move past inspiration and into action?
Yeah. Well, I think waiting and permission are huge. I think dealing with our own inner critic, you know, like, the negative self-talk, which, you know, I'm not a therapist. I don't want to venture into therapy territory, but there's a lot of practical reframing that I help my clients do. Even down to seeing opportunities, you know, I have a couple different ways that I partner with people, but one way is, you know, it's monthly coaching on a retainer basis. And so before every call, my clients fill out a form online, sends me the answers. It gets both of us in the mindset for the call. Mm-hmm. And the questions that they have to answer are really simple. It's like, what wins or accomplishments have you had since we spoke last? What opportunities have arisen? What challenges have come up, if any? What insights have you had? And what do you want to talk about next? What's interesting is that if you can shift your focus, you can shift the way you see your world and the way you show up in it. And so, so many times we're focused on what we don't have, things that we feel like are going wrong, things we haven't done that are waiting on the to-do list, right? But if we look at the opposite of that, like we all accomplish a lot of things in a week, even if they're not the things we want to accomplish, right?
Exactly.
So if we can celebrate the, like, man, we all do a lot in a week. You know, we all have opportunities where we are, big or small opportunities. We all have wins and accomplishments. Like it can be as simple as, you know, I meditated for 10 minutes today and man, it really helped me feel more focused and less stressed at work. That's a big win. Mm-hmm. So helping people shift their focus is a huge part of the work I do. And what happens is that when people start to see opportunities where they are, they start to see things to be grateful for, they start to see, oh man, I actually am accomplishing some things, they start to feel more in control of their lives.
Nice.
They stop living in such a reactionary way, right? Like I was doing before. And they start saying, you know what? There are some things I can do. I can take action. So, you know, feeling empowered. I was just talking with a fellow coach the other day, and we were talking about this idea that, you know, people show up whole. People show up whole to me. I'm not trying to fix anybody. I believe that they're a whole person. They have all the resources they need. And I'm just serving as a guide and a partner to help them recognize all of that and empower them.
Wow. That's awesome. What a great way of looking at people.
It's such a shift from, I think, the way we think of ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We're like, I'm broken. There's something wrong. There must be something wrong with me. How can I feel this way? You know, but it's normalizing all of that too, right? Like so many clients, they're like, am I the only one that feels this way? It's like, no, of course not. It's par for the course that you're going to feel moments of self-doubt and you're going to feel unworthy or undeserving or inferior or whatever you feel. You're going to feel all those things, just like there are going to be moments where you feel amazing and successful and like you've accomplished what you've been working toward. So it's like, again, it's a both and. We don't just get the amazing warm and fuzzy feelings. We have to deal with all the hard feelings too, but that's all of life.
I'm just going to sit on that for a second. That's all life. I like that a lot because, you know, we often think work-life balance, all of these things, but it's all life.
Mm-hmm.
I like that a lot.
There's a really wonderful TED Talk by Susan David, who is a psychologist at Harvard. And I'm going to reference the quote, but I can't remember it exactly. Anyway, she talks about, you know, we don't get to build a meaningful life and career and have the family we want without experiencing hard things. Like that is the price we pay for being here and being on this earth. We're going to go through hard things if you want to have a meaningful life. And I loved that because it gives, you know, purpose to the things we go through and helps us have some agency over the hard things we experience.
Right. And instead of running away from them, you're anticipating, maybe not, you know, maybe not looking at them like they're going to happen tomorrow, but you're anticipating that hard things are going to come and how are you going to respond?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, instead of, oh, why me? It's like, oh yeah, life. Okay. This is, I expected something, didn't know it was going to be this, but you know what? This is my reality now and we're going to figure it out. Instead of, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is happening. Why me? I don't deserve this. I mean, of course we're going to have those feelings too, but we can get stuck in those. And so I think we have to have those feelings. They're part of the process. And then, okay, this is happening. Let's do it.
Yeah. Wow. So one of the questions that I love to ask people about is vision, and specifically, how do you force yourself to think bigger? But I thought I would ask it slightly different for you just based upon the conversation that we've had today. And that's, how do you balance thinking big and living intentionally in the moment? Are they mutually exclusive? Can they coexist? What do you think?
Yeah, it's a practice. I'm someone who can think really broadly and think about vision and ideas and get excited all day. So I need to make it real. And I do that by setting quarterly goals. And nice. I will, you know, I have them in a note on my phone and in Dropbox. So wherever I am, I can access them. And I take a look at them on a regular basis. And those goals might be related to, you know, financial health, physical health, relationships, business goals. But I have a lot of lists on my phone. And some of them are, you know, the quarterly goals list is very practical. It's like, this is what I'm going to do. These are the actions I'm going to take this quarter. It's very succinct. And then I have lists or, you know, notes that are more broad. Like, these are, you know, future goals, or this is like where I want to see my business in the next year. But I do a lot of that envisioning my future when I'm journaling. And I just kind of go with the energy of it. Like earlier this week on Monday, you know, I did my taxes and I was like, shoot, you know, I owe more than I anticipated because I made more. Like, okay, it's a great problem to have, but now I have to, you know, make more money to pay the more in taxes that I didn't realize I was going to owe. But then I booked five, you know, I confirmed five new clients that day. And so it's just like in that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, I was so ecstatic, like, A, to work with new clients because I love coaching and I'm always excited to work with new people and introduce them to the framework of coaching. But like B, I was like, oh, I can provide for myself. Like I'm going to figure out a way to make this money. And I was feeling really energized. And so I did a little bit of writing that evening, like, man, I'm so excited. Like, this is the most clients I've ever booked in one day. I'm really doing this, you know, because you have moments of doubt. And so yeah. I was like, oh, I'm really doing this. I'm doing this and I can keep doing this. And, you know, this is what I'm hoping for in the coming months. And when I'm having like days where things are hard or frustrating, like I go back to the lists or the writing I did when I was feeling energized and excited, and I can draw from that.
Yeah. Congratulations on booking five clients in a day. That's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. It's interesting you mentioned that too, because a lot of conversations I've been having lately with other people in the creative business industry is that there's like a shifting nature of business right now, whether it's, you know, getting new work or figuring out how to promote yourself effectively and building relationships, and almost shifting in a way of not getting as much feedback as maybe you're used to. People are more willing to ghost you or not even respond to anything. And I'm just curious if that's something that you're seeing as well. Probably not if you're booking, you know, five people in a day, but I was just wondering if you're hearing that as well, or if, you know, I'm just talking to the wrong people.
I mean, I think, you know, look, I think things are feeling a little tumultuous right now with the political landscape, with the economy. Everyone's a little unsure what things are going to look like. And I am hearing that, you know, some people are feeling that in regards to their business. And, you know, it's like, I'm not booking five clients every day. What I'm doing is, you know, I'm planting seeds and investing in opportunities that I think are going to help me connect with people who want to work with me. So I'm being really focused and targeted about how I do outreach. And, you know, a lot of that is speaking and writing. But yeah, I think it ebbs and flows. And I think we're at a point right now where, you know, people are feeling it a little bit. But I'm hopeful. I think it's going to shift and change again, like it always does. Yes. One of the things, you know, December, January were really, really quiet months for me, and which is to be expected because the end of the year, people are wrapping up with me. Nobody wants to start in January. People come back and it takes them a little bit to get settled in and then think about things like, oh, I want to work with a coach. Right. So those are quiet months for me. And, you know, at first I was like, oh no, is my practice over? Like, is anyone ever going to want to work with me again? Like, right. These are the thoughts that we have as business owners. It's wild. Like, of course people want to work with me. I'm an expert. I have, you know, experience and training and like, I'm awesome at what I do. My clients tell me that, but I had this moment of panic. And then I thought, you know what? There are other things, other ways you can invest in your business and plant seeds when the ground feels fallow. So I was like, wow, okay, I'm going to work on a writing project. And then that turned into some speaking gigs. And then I was like, oh, and I'll, you know, I do a writing column with Working Not Working. And so it's like, well, I have that. That's great. And, you know, how can I use this time to plan? Because things are going to get busy again, right? And they are now very busy. But how can I use this downtime, or what I view as downtime, to plant seeds for the future? Because if you don't continuously plant seeds, you know, when things are busy, you're not planting seeds because you're so busy harvesting. But you need to plant seeds. Otherwise, the harvest is going to be over, and things are going to ebb and flow again. And you're going to be like, oh, shoot, I should have planted seeds like a couple of months ago, because now things are quiet again. And so I try to view it as, okay, again, what opportunities exist for me right now, right? What things do I want to get to or work on? And that, you know, it's financially that can, you know, things are a little more lean and they were for me just before the new year. But I've been budgeting every month, and it's just like, okay, well, this is the reality. And then after the new year, I'm going to get more clients, and then we'll be back up in the numbers. So
that's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Cause I think sometimes we do get stuck in that, that emotion of just like, I don't know, do the downtimes trigger that imposter syndrome? You know, it's like, oh, well, no one's calling. I must be horrible. Yeah. Or they must have figured me out.
Oh, for sure. Also, I think in our minds, we think, well, everyone else is getting phone calls. Everyone else is getting clients. But none of us talk about this. So what we don't know is that other people are going through the same things, right? Yeah. Someone's business can look successful from the outside, but you don't ever know the full story unless they tell you. So I think that it's important to be honest about how we grow as business owners and entrepreneurs, and, you know, the hard stuff too.
Awesome. Well, Tina, this has been an amazing conversation. I've enjoyed just your entire story and just how open you are to sharing everything. I think that's amazing.
Thank you.
But my final question for you is, what was the last book or podcast that absolutely blew your mind?
Okay. Well, I have two things. Number one, the podcast Hurry Slowly by Jocelyn K. Gly is absolutely my favorite podcast in the entire world right now. It's all about being more efficient and productive by slowing down. And she talks to experts about everything from the benefits of sleep to how we become overwhelmed and paralyzed by choice. I mean, it's just really thoughtful and well produced and well done. And every time I listen to it, I walk away with, you know, at least one nugget of truth that I'm going to translate into a practical application for my work in life. So Hurry Slowly by Jocelyn K. Gly is number one. Number two is, I read this book of essays by Ann Patchett. The book is called This is the Story of a Happy Marriage, which is the title of one of the essays. One of the essays within the book, called The Getaway Car, talks about how our job as creators is to forgive ourselves over and over. And if you don't mind, I'd love to read an excerpt from that.
Please, absolutely.
So this is, again, it's Ann Patchett from the essay, The Getaway Car, from her book, This is the Story of a Happy Marriage. Forgiveness, the ability to forgive oneself. Stop here for a few breaths and think about this, because it is the key to making art, and very possibly the key to finding any semblance of happiness in life. Every time I have set out to translate the book that exists in such brilliant detail on the big screen of my limbic system onto a piece of paper, I grieve for my own lack of talent and intelligence. Every single time. Were I smarter, more gifted, I could pin down a closer facsimile of the wonders I see. I believe more than anything that this grief of constantly having to face down our own inadequacies is what keeps people from being writers. Forgiveness, therefore, is key. I can't write the book I want to write, but I can and will write the book I am capable of writing. Again and again throughout the course of my life, I will forgive myself.
Wow.
It's good, right?
Wow. That's great. That is such a beautiful note to end on. Well, Tina, thank you so much for just spending some time sharing your story. Where can people learn more about you and meet you?
Well, thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I am online. I'm at Tina Esmaker on social media, and you can go to tinaesmaker.com for links to, I do a monthly newsletter, and give people homework if they want to take action. And I also link to my Working Networking writing column there and share about, you know, the work I do as a coach with individuals and teams. So TinaSmaker.com or TinaSmaker on social media. Please say hi.
As we come to the end of this episode of Getting Work to Work, I want to thank you for listening to this podcast. Would you be willing to share Getting Work to Work with other creative entrepreneurs, leaders, and curiosity builders who need to hear this message of reinvention? You can send them to gwtw.co to access every episode of the show, or you can have them search for Getting Work to Work on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Do you have a big idea that you're chasing or want to share how you're growing in your creative work? Perhaps you need some advice, encouragement, or just want someone to say hi to? Drop me a line by sending me an email. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at CM Studios. Not only do I love talking about curiosity in this podcast, but I like writing about it too. And I just launched a new email series for creative entrepreneurs who are struggling with burnout, conformity, and mediocrity called The Curiosity Killers. Each day focuses on one killer and provides a few steps you can take to build your curiosity through wonder, learning, and action. Head to curiositykillers.com to sign up for this fun and serious look at why curiosity matters. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.